And I can see the ground now, I'm way too gone, way too gone. All right, legends. Welcome back, dude, to yet another episode of Get Around Me. What a time it is to be alive, truly. And I mean that today far less than I've meant it previously. My Lord, I'm back. I'm back in my beloved Harbour City. It's all happening. Daylight savings is over. I've got the post-holiday blues. The UGG boots are on. I mean, how quickly can a vibe change? I left this beautiful city. It was 32 degrees. People are making out on the street. Now it's like Gotham City out there or something. It's cold. It's dark. I'm wearing my UGG boots. The Uggies are back out. I know we had the solar eclipse recently, and people say that's like a big spiritual moment, new beginnings or something. Really, the main spiritual transition period for me each year is the UGG boots coming back out of the closet. There's only two seasons that I adhere to. As I've said previously, I do believe that spring and autumn are communist conspiracy theories set up for reasons that aren't completely clear to me. There are only two seasons, summer and winter, yin and yang, push and pull, cricket and footy, UGG boots and thongs. So I've come back. It's daylight savings is gone. The UGG boots are out. I'm wearing a beautiful knitted jumper my mum bought for me last year. It's a different world, guys. It's a different world. I found it a little bit jarring coming back and it's daylight savings. I almost went to bed at like 5:45 yesterday because I just didn't know what was happening. I was like, it's fucking 9 p.m. I haven't even had dinner. What's going on? You know, my routines are out of whack. But it is good to be back in Sydney. I do have the post-holiday blues, I must admit. I think it's good if you have a holiday or something to come back like on the Friday and then have the weekend to just chill and then go back to work on the Monday. I came home at like 4 p.m. on Monday. And then I woke up Tuesday and I was like, I think there's something I'm supposed to do. And I was like, oh, fuck, I got to go to work, dude. Jarring. So jarring. And it's like, how do you go from sitting near Tommy Little to this? That's what I'm thinking on my way to work Tuesday morning. 16 hours ago, I was a mere three and a half tables away from Australian icon Tommy Little. And now I'm just walking to work like any other schmuck on the planet. God. Do you know what I mean? Very jarring experience coming back home. But it is good to be back. I miss Melbourne. I can only assume the 7-Elevens are just closing down at pace around that great city. Thank you to the 7-Elevens for keeping me alive during the Melbourne Comedy Festival. No gourmet sandwiches at the 7-Elevens in Melbourne, which I found particularly peculiar. I'm talking about, you know, the platinum range. They got the roast beef, the chicken schnitzel. Not available in Melbourne for whatever reason. Yet every 40 metres, there's a 7-Eleven just slapping you in the face. I will say, walking home blazed every night with a 7-Eleven every 35 metres did lead to me snacking quite aggressively. My diet has been absolutely shocking for the previous 2 weeks. I honestly think I haven't seen a vegetable since early March this year. And then I've come home, right? How's this? So I come home on the Monday and think, fuck, there's no food in the house. Realize, got my Easter chocolate that my mum gave me before I left. Got a full Easter bunny and an Easter egg, which I destroyed at pace on arrival. So that did help with the holiday blues. I'm not going to sit here and beg for more sympathy. I've climbed into my body weight in chocolate and I'm feeling a lot better. So it's a different dynamic around the pad as well. My God, no longer is it three blokes and one girl. Rowan's still in Melbourne for the next 7 years or whatever. I think he has like 12 shows left. Go check him out. Mark, he's in Europe, so it's just me and Imogen, which is a dynamic change. Not a negative one by any stretch. But the thing is, it used to be three guys and one girl. That's three grubs, one girl. No longer can I hide behind the shroud of mystery that is me being one of the three grubs that live here. If anything grubby happens in this house over the next 2 weeks or so before Rowan or Marky come home, it was me. If a paddle pop goes missing, we can no longer just correctly assume it was Rowan. If there were some blokes over on the Friday night, and now the place is a mess because there was a bit of a session on. They were my blokes. Do you know what I mean? I'm on notice. It's obvious that whatever's going on, it was me. Imogen's a very dynamic young woman. She's pretty much barely home. Feels like I'm living alone half the time, really. So I'm on notice. I got to lift my game, lift my standards, okay? It's easy when Rowan's around because you can throw him under the bus for anything. And he'll sort of just go with the flow. Stuff just flies off his back like water. Do you know what I mean? He can't remember if he had the Magnum or not. Most of the time he has, so we're all just sort of living in that reality. Now, it's time to switch on. It's time to be held accountable for my actions. But I've got the New Balances on, I'm cranking the boy genius, and I'm ready to be an extremely conscientious roommate. So, looking forward to the challenge. It's a bit of a chaotic time. I've just tried to get back into rugby league. I haven't really been a proper rugby league fan for about 10 years, really. I've tried desperately, but for whatever reason, the game just hasn't taken me for whatever reason. And after falling victim to the Las Vegas round marketing earlier this year, I'm now kind of back into rugby league. And it's annoying because South Sydney, my team, suck again. And it's pissing me off, dude. It's making me more toxic than before when I wasn't even watching the thing. I found myself DMing their coach on Instagram some threats, and I thought, this is out of control. I've been a fan of this sport again for 4 weeks, and look at me, DMing this 47-year-old man, threatening him that if they don't win this weekend, you know, I might peg half a dozen fresh eggs at his family home. That's not really the sort of bloke I want to be, but that's the position I find myself in, having become a rugby league fan once again. And it's my own fault because Souths have just had a pretty ripping 8 years or whatever. Premiership, grand final or two, couple of semis. And I was sort of on the outer. It's hard to get into stuff. From now, honestly, I pretty much just would rather watch live sport over any television program whatsoever. Live sport and the US office, pretty much the only viewing experiences I'm into. I'd honestly rather watch like the Iron Man Championships than try and get into another television show. There's too much telly on, you know? So I'm back into rugby league, and now I'm following the worst team in the comp. And fuck, it's annoying, to be honest. I'm watching NRL 360 clips on YouTube, watching Paul Kent, fresh off a domestic violence allegation, talk about the culture surrounding my club, and by God, I'm listening to him, you know? I'm taking culture advice from one of the biggest cunts to walk the East Coast. And I don't know how it's happened. I've been seduced by the East Coast's most aggressive game. And I've convinced myself that the hits get bigger every year. And it's annoying. So, yeah. I'm feeling more toxic than ever. I'm back in Sydney. And I don't know how, but I became a rugby league fan in Melbourne. How does that even happen? I think because you just have nothing to do during the days before your shows. So I watched so much rugby league in the afternoons on the weekends because I had nothing to do and the great game has seduced me. So I'm an avid fan of the worst rugby league club in Australia right now and it's keeping me up at night for whatever reason. Also, I feel that I maybe jumped the gun on the Rebel Wilson stories last week. Rebel Wilson was teeing off on, I can't even remember the bloke's name, from Fat Pizza, and also having to go at Sacha Baron Cohen, who's a known freak, probably. Comes out this week. Rebel Wilson reveals who gave her her first orgasm and who she lost her virginity to. I'm talking about her having a maybe potential beef with Paul Fenwick of Fat Pizza fame last week. I've missed out on the gold this week, so I'm not going to go in on Rebel 2 weeks in a row. It feels maybe potentially a little mean. I really hope that Rebel Wilson's book sells really well after all this carry-on. Because can you imagine dragging all these stories through the media? So embarrassing. She lost her virginity at 35. I tell you what I'd be talking about if I lost my virginity at 35. Literally anything else. Dude, if I lost my virginity at 35 and you asked me when I lost my virginity, I'd say I don't remember. I'd say, I don't know, year 7? Next question, okay? Hey, Bill, when did you lose your virginity? Geez, South Sydney aren't playing too well, are they? immediately change the subject. I wouldn't dedicate a whole chapter of my book to it. If I lost my virginity at 35, halfway through my book, having not mentioned a single sexual encounter, I just put in brackets at the end of one of the chapters, oh, by the way, just so you know, this whole time throughout the book, I've been banging heaps from a suitable age. And then I would move on. I wouldn't dedicate a whole chapter of the book to saying I lost my virginity at 35 and you can too. And I don't want to nitpick. I don't want to tell people how to live their lives. Rebel was saying, you know, do it when you feel comfortable. Of course. Of course you should lose your virginity when you feel comfortable. Also, while acknowledging within a separate context that 35 is way too late, okay? Honestly, if you're a bloke and you've lost it at 35, that's school shooter stuff. So I think that while accepting people who have lost their virginity at 35 and letting them know that that's a completely okay thing to do, we should also be pushing people to try and maybe lose it before 30. I think, honestly, if you encourage blokes to lose their virginity in their mid-30s, that's how Westfields get shot up, to be honest. I think women go nuts. I think, honestly, if we start having 34-year-old virgin blokes running around, that's how a Guzman Y. Gomez gets shot up, okay? I think if you're a bloke, look to lose it before 25. Public service announcement. Is that fair? Horses for courses. I think, ladies, if you want to wait till 40, that's okay, because you guys don't have an interest in firearms. Men, any bloke who's a 27-year-old virgin, DM me privately and we will work towards sorting this out. I think that would be for the best. And I just really hope Rebbe Wilson's book sells well, because to drag out some of these embarrassing stories and then, like, you know, debut at like 14 on the bestsellers list or whatever, or like not really make a ripple, I really hope she's able to flog a few of these things, because this appears to be one of the most embarrassing memoirs I've ever come across. I mean, talk about fucking bridesmaids a bit more. Me, maybe I'm cut from a different cloth. I would be trying to impress people with how cool my life is. I'd be like, yeah, I lost my virginity at 16 or whatever. Fuck yeah, dude. How cool is that, that I've had sex before? That's the tone of my book. I'd be like, yeah, I drink alcohol and do drugs sometimes. Maybe the sickest bloke alive. I'll be cutting a completely different tone to Rebel. Do you know what I mean? I'd be bragging openly, dude. I'd be cut from the Matthew Perry cloth, I think. Talking about kissing Jennifer Aniston on the lips. Like, who wants to have a beer with me now, guys? That's pretty cool, isn't it? I feel like Rebel Wilson saying she lost her virginity at 35, if she doesn't sell millions of dollars worth of this book, that's kind of like going on Love Island and then not getting any followers off it. You know, like, I know a couple of people that have gone on Love Island and then they come off and they get like 9,000 followers and it's like, ugh. We saw you get fingered in a pool for 9,000 followers, you know? Like, if you get fingered in the pool and come off with 300,000 and you're a full-time influencer and it's all happening, that's pretty sick. But if you come off and you've sort of, you know, been grinding on a guy with a face tattoo and you come off and you've still got to work in marketing, that's unfortunate, I feel. So, yeah, God bless Rebel Wilson, I would say. The bravery I'm seeing, because, you know, once a week I chuck on news.com.au to just see what's out there as far as the news. See if any stories might be suited to my podcast. Got to get to 45 minutes at all costs. I'll have a scroll. And, mate, what I'm seeing from Rebel Wilson, it's quite embarrassing. So I wish her the best. And do you know what? If it's a number one bestseller and she's laughing all the way to the bank, then fuck yeah, dude. Maybe you should have waited even longer to lose your virginity. Who knows how many books you could have sold if you waited till 40? I'm not sure. But we wish Rebel Wilson the best. But anyway, yeah, I'm a bit frazzled, eh? It's weird when you get out of your routine. Not that I'm like some crazy routine guy, but, you know, I wake up this morning, I've got no instant coffee and no toothpaste. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's, you need those. They're two things you need to operate fully fledged. So, still just readjusting to my life back in Sydney, which I know is a hilarious statement to make, after spending 12 days, really, if you include the Easter long weekend, like 7 business days in Melbourne. So a little bit off the pace, a little bit off the pace, but getting back into it as quick as we can. Thank you to everyone who came to see my Melbourne shows, by the way. I had the funnest time. Perth, I'm coming to Perth this Saturday. Perth, Saturday, April 13. Brisbane, April 18 and 19. Adelaide, April 20. Canberra, May 3rd. Sydney, May 10. Newcastle, May 11. Wollongong, May 25. Get around me. Name of the podcast. The show is absolutely cranking now. I'm really excited to bring it to the other cities. Perth, this Saturday, come on down. Oasis Comedy Club at 6:30. Going to be so sick. Then I got Brisbane next week. Both those shows already sold out. But then I got Adelaide on Saturday. Then I got Canberra, Sydney, Newcastle, Wollongong. So get around that. You can buy those tickets via the link in the show notes of this podcast or my Instagram bio. Hope to see you there. Anyway, so a couple of Melbourne things to wrap up from my time. Just once again, thank you to everyone who came out. Thanks to everyone who bought me a beer or said hi after. Couple of guys dropping off some weed. Absolute legends. Great to hang out with you all. A few people I'm seeing for the third year in a row, so great to catch up each year. I appreciate you guys coming out. And what a time, you know. Love the Melbourne Comedy Festival. Just, it's like summer camp for comedians. You're seeing old friends, you're making new friends, you got a crush on this chick. It's bloody all happening down there, dude. Fuck, it's fun. It's honestly so fun. It is quite draining though as well, you know, because you got to wait around all day to do your shows. You got to constantly be worried about ticket sales. It is emotionally draining, highs and lows, because then post show you're so high, you're having beers, people are like, you're so funny, you have fantastic hair. Then the next day you got to do it all again. So it's a lot. It is a lot, the Melbourne Comedy Festival. And 11 shows as well. Like, it's a crazy amount of shows to do. Some people do 22, God bless them. But it's a great town, Melbourne. Fuck, I love it down there. The Barn Me scene is unbelievable. And I've said this before and I'll say it again. Honestly, if you're not Vietnamese and you're making sandwiches, I don't really want to hear from you. But anyway, dude, Melbourne crowds. Yeah, look, sometimes a lot of comedians will say Melbourne crowds are like cowards or whatever, or kind of soft. And they kind of are sometimes. And I think Melbourne gets a bad rap sometimes because all the comedians do like 57 shows there. So if you do 57 shows anywhere, you're going to have a couple of crowds where you're like absolute dogs or whatever. Or just like, not dogs, but just kind of a bit soft. Like you have a couple of shows in Melbourne where you sort of walk off being like, what was the reaction to some of that? As far as like, I'm not edgy. Sometimes Melbourne crowds make you feel like you're heaps edgy or you're like saying some crazy shit and you're like, I'm pretty sure this isn't anything. You're listening back to the recording, like, am I just sending off like Isaac Butterfield rockets in my show? Like people are like gasping and stuff and it's like, I don't mind you guys not liking edgy comedy. That's absolutely fine. You're well within your right to not enjoy edgy and or dark humor. I just don't think that's what I'm doing. Like, I feel like you guys are reacting to edgy and dark humor that is not happening in this room. Like, the bar for what is or isn't edgy in Melbourne is just a lot lower than any other city in Australia. I mean, they don't even have it in Perth. And Cairns, you can be openly racist on stage. So every city does have its own flavor, and Melbourne is probably the softest. But at the same time, to be fair to that great city, I think if you did 11 shows in Perth, you'd come off a couple of those shows being like weak dogs as well, you know? And once again, not that I've got any problem with a crowd being like, whatever, we're not into this. This is too edgy or too dark or too full on. I just don't really identify as a comedian saying those things. So when you're getting that reaction, you're like, okay, whatever, you know? Fine. That's how you guys want to perceive me for the next 53 minutes. I'm on board. Let's do it. So the crowds were fun. Most of them were absolutely cranking. Couple where I was like, you guys are cowards, but whatever. Still a few laughs. And it was a wild unit block me and Freddie were staying in. What about this, right? Last week, come back from a gig. This is like middle of the day as well. Second floor on the door, there's like a vomit-stained tea towel. And it stinks. Like the whole hallway stinks of vomit. And there's a note and it says, Unit 5, stop vomiting off the balcony and throwing rubbish off the balcony. So I guess someone had just vomited into a towel and pegged it into the backyard of this Melbourne unit block, which I can tell you as someone from another city, that's not acceptable here either. You can't just vomit into the backyard of a unit block. That's in poor taste. The strata committee is going to be up in arms. There's no doubt about that. And it said, Unit 5, stop vomiting off the balcony and throwing rubbish into the backyard. If you continue to do this, we will pick it up and feed it back to you like the fucking dogs you are. This was typed up on a piece of paper in the unit block. So just giving you a little flavor for the unit block we were sitting in. My God, beef in the streets of the highest order. And it was actually quite a loose block. Like it would constantly smell like weed and it wasn't us. And a lot of partying. Like it was going at all hours. And you know, a lot of weird blokes in tracksuits coming and going from our unit block. So potentially we were staying in a slightly harder area than I gave it credit for. I'm not sure. All I can say for certain is that Unit 5 are weak dogs. And if they continue to behave that way, I will feed their vomit back to them like the weak dogs they are. So I don't know. Probably good to get out of that block while the going's good. And spoiler alert, I actually vomited off our balcony on the last morning. So I can only apologize there. And hopefully for the sake of my Airbnb rating, Unit 5 have copped the heat for that. Hopefully some bloke from Unit 5 is just getting absolutely fed right now because I vomited off our balcony on the Monday morning. So shout out Unit 5. Anyway, what about this dude? So yeah, the thing about the Melbourne Comedy Festival is there's a lot of different types of comedians. You got the trendy comedians. You got the award-winning comedians. You got the telly comedians. But tell you what, dude, Melbourne is a portside town, and guess what? The ships are rolling up as well, so you've also got the cruise ship boys rolling in and rolling in heavy. So it's a real smorgasbord of all different types of stand-ups. And then you've got all, you know, the improv people and the sketch and the cabaret. I mean, it's a who's who of who gives a fuck down there, and there's all sorts of different types of people pursuing this noble art form. And there's great, one of the best parts of the festival is the late-night showcases. And basically, you get these lineup shows where it can be pretty sick. You can end up following like really famous comedians. And some of the lineups are mad. You know, I've hosted a couple in Perth where it's like, I'm bringing on like Arj Barker and Akmal and stuff. So sick. And dude, we went to this one late night showcase that Rowan was on to watch him. And fuck, it was crazy, dude. You know, late night showcases, I think the crowd, they want it to be a bit loose. They want it to be, you know, people riffing, few beers, this sort of stuff. You go to like Fat Cave in Adelaide, Mickey D's late night showcase. He's riffing up a storm. He's doing all sorts of weird shit. I personally go up on most late night showcases a little bit drunk and high in good faith. Bit of rock and roll. That's what the kids want, mate, okay? You want to see a bloke deliver stand-up comedy word for word? Go see it at 7 p.m. You come to an 11 p.m. show or whatever, they want to see a little wavy up there, boys. Let off a few riffs, you know? So we went to see this late night showcase, and it's kind of a famous one in Melbourne, and Rowan was on the lineup, and fuck, it was a crazy show, man. But like, not crazy for the ways you think it would be, because I don't even know, dude. It was a weird crowd. First up, they bring up this like famous telly comedian, whose name I won't mention, because he ate shit, dude, for like 17 minutes as well. And just like, no riffing, just like a word-for-word monologue. And it's so funny because, you know, when I bomb, no one really gives a fuck because I'm not famous. Whereas this guy, the poor telly comedians, they go up there and everyone's like, oh my God, it's so-and-so. Wow. And then they go up there, eat shit, and people are like so disappointed, you know? Like the highest of highs when they go up and then it's just sort of chugging into the ground as they continue to bomb. Poor bloke. And then, fuck, it was the weirdest show I've ever seen. Like, It's just cruise ship guys going up, doing like 14-minute monologues of like stuff they would have said on Hey Hey It's Saturday in 1993. No riffing. They're not drunk. They're all wearing fucking, you know, business shirts or whatever. It was the unfunnest show at like midnight I've ever seen. And it's like the show's billed as like, you know, come to the fucking crazy late night showcase. Da-na-na-na. And it's like just cruise ship guys just eating it, dude. One after the other. This one woman went up there and she did like the grossest set. And then halfway through was like, my parents are here filming. It was so sweet. Her like 80-year-old parents are like filming her whole set as she does like the craziest anal jokes I've ever seen. I think Rowan went on in the midst of all of this. That was the funniest thing, that like in between like six different 45-year-old cruise ship comedians, just a mildly blazed Rowan Arneal goes up to do some of the trendiest comedy you've ever seen. Fuck, it was a weird show, dude. And this woman's going up there and her beautiful parents are filming her, and she does a mic drop to end about like some guy having sex with her. And she goes, you know what he said during sex? Do you know what this guy said to me during sex? He said, fuck this, I'm done. And then she like threw the mic down and walked off as her parents are like crying. It was the weirdest show I've ever been to, dude. And then this cruise ship guy gets up there and he's just bombing. So like the bombing was crazy, dude. And he gets up there and he goes monologuing these like Jimmy Fallon sets where it's like if anyone just starts riffing, I think this could be a great show. And he's bombing so hard. And then 12 minutes into this bomb, he goes, what about, did everyone watch the Socceroos in the World Cup last year? Oh, I mean the Matildas. Did everyone watch the Matildas in the World Cup last year? And everyone's like, yeah. And he's like, yeah, I guess we got over that pretty quickly, hey? And everyone's like, what? He's like, yeah, we all watched the Matildas for about 2 weeks. And then the whole nation went, yep, I think we've had enough of that. Like in that tone, and it just bombs so hard, dude. And I was at the back and I was like, kind of, I was like, brother, that's crazy. Because, man, blokes like this doing these sort of Matilda's jokes, this is why people sometimes are like, oh, fuck, here we go when I talk about the Matildas. Because they go, oh, yeah, sick. Another fucking straight white guy talking about the Matildas. This will be fucking sick, re a hate crime or whatever. And it's like, Jesus Christ, dude. And I watched the show for like 2 hours. My God, it was the worst Matilda's joke I've ever seen. And just the way he said it, he goes, he's like, I think we're done with that. And then just complete silence, dude. And it's like, firstly, the World Cup ended. Do you know what I mean? It's not like everyone was like, yeah, we're fucking bored of this. The World Cup ended, and it's like, God, just the hacks, you know? And the hacks, they ruin it for everyone. They ruin it for everyone. Like, a couple of times, I'm like, oh, I'm a big Matildas fan. I remember one time this woman goes, hey, be very fucking careful with what you're about to say right now. And it's because of blokes like this, you know? Please, if you're going to talk about the Matildas, do not hack it up there, because you're ruining it for everyone, lads. You are ruining it for everyone. Wildest late show I've ever seen. Literally, maybe 11 out of 12 acts bombed except for Rowan Arneal. So, shout out to Rowan. Repping Sydney City. Fuck, it was crazy, dude. Anyway, great times in Melbourne. I think that's it. Honestly, I was thinking of stories I could tell you guys for my time in the last weekend of the Melbourne Comedy Festival. And it's just one of those things where it's just sort of unadulterated good times. Just so many fun hangs. The shows were really great. Do you know what I mean? In my personal show, the people that came out are so lovely. I'm not getting heckled or nothing crazy's happening. People are just sick. Great shows, great hangs, great times. So maybe not the most electric yarns, but some of the best times of my life. And now I'm a sad, sad Sydney boy. Well, not that sad, but you know, post-holiday blues a little bit. And also, I ate so much chocolate when I came home. I think it's really weighed me down. I'm having trouble revving up into the week. Definitely been one of those weeks for me where you just go Wednesday, I'll see you Wednesday, you know, right off the Monday and the Tuesday. We just don't have the time. So anyway, okay, up next, couple of things I want to talk about. I put on my Instagram story pros and cons of living in Perth as a shout out to the city I'm playing this weekend. Get around me, Perth. Then I want to talk about Morgan Wallen, did something fucking wild. And then I want to talk about UFC 300. Didn't have time to do like a standalone one, so I'll just talk about it at the end this week. So, Perth, actual pros and cons of living in Perth. I asked the great people who live on the west coast of Australia what they actually think. Now, Perth is a great town. Is it too far away? Absolutely it is. And that was one of the main answers I received on my Instagram story. And I can't get behind this enough. Con, too far away. I think Perth, keep in mind I'm literally making this up and I don't think it's true at all. Is Perth closer to South Africa than it is to Sydney? Someone double check that. I've completely vibed that out. But vibing it out, honestly, I think Johannesburg to Perth is probably quicker than Sydney to Perth. My flights to Perth this year are $9.90 return. I mean, I'm halfway to London, lads, you know? $9.90 return, you may as well go and do a safari in South Africa. You're another 2 hours away from Cape Town. Crazy. I mean, we live in a crazy country. The geography of this nation, how we just don't use the middle. Do you know what would be nice if there was like three or four cities in the middle of the country that we could sort of hop along to or, you know, use as stops? You know, you go to fucking this place, then you go to Adelaide, then you go to Perth. Instead, we got this massive country where we refuse to use the middle of it because, to be fair, it's just a desert. And we have like seven people that live in Australia. And I'm one of them. And you're another one of them. You know? Like, we should have like 500 million people in this country. And we have like seven. Insanity, dude. It's too far away from anything. And maybe even just make another city on the West Coast. Like, all right, fine. Perth is too far away from the East Coast. Fine. But the thing with the East Coast, mate, it's a very dynamic coast, the East Coast. We've got multiple cities. Whereas Perth, they've built Perth and they've just gone tools down, lads. We'll have a couple of towns up and down the coast, but like we'll do Exmouth and Port Hedland and Karratha, but those towns are going to have about four people in them as well. Like maybe build a second city, at least get like some Newcastle, some Wollongong action happening. Fremantle's kind of a vibe, I guess. But again, I don't know if it's got its own, if you would say Fremantle's a city. Can we get like a second Perth happening 2 hours above Perth? You know, so maybe you can make a bit more of a trip out of it when you're over there. But my God, most isolated city in the world. You should get a banh mi on arrival or something. Do you know what I mean? Like you roll into Perth and Perth acts like it's fucking Melbourne or something, you know? You roll into Perth, people go, oh, how's your flight? Fucking ages. My flight, it took all day. Yeah, how's Sydney going? I don't know, it's in another fucking time zone, lads. I'll have to call them up and ask how tomorrow's going. For whatever reason, I actually sell quite well in Perth, so thank you to the people that come out to my shows. But otherwise, Jesus Christ, you'd never go, would you? I've got some people who like my stand-up comedy in Perth and my nan. So each year, I head back over there to see those two groups of people. But I tell you what, when you meet people from the East Coast and they've never been to Perth, you can't blame them. Because fuck, it's ages away. It's nowhere near anything. So shout out to the people of Perth. I mean, to be 5 hours away and then you get there, they don't even have a Luna Park. Do you know what I mean? Like at least have a roller coaster ready to go or something. Like there's very little effort to entertain you once you're there. It's like they're so far away they've given up on anyone coming. Do you know what I mean? That's kind of the vibe. Get a photo with a quokka if you can be fucked. But apart from that, yeah, don't worry about it. That's kind of the vibe on Perth. They're not really trying. Maybe they've made more of an effort to market to South Africa. I'm not sure. But yeah, fuck, it is ages away. And that was the overwhelming sentiment I received in my Instagram story. But let's get glass half full for a second. Let's get positive. Pro, too far away to be attacked during a world war. That's a pretty significant pro. I honestly think Australia could be invaded and taken over by China, and it would take them like 15 years to remember they forgot to take over Perth.
I could see Perth just operating as its own city-state, completely independent of Chinese rule for like 20 years before China was like, all right, come on, guys, we better make the effort and invade Perth, you know? It's technically a city as well. So I guess that's one thing. I mean, look at COVID. Even COVID couldn't really be fucked. And COVID went everywhere. Do you know what I mean? COVID's all through Africa. It's in South America. It's a world traveler. And even COVID was like, all right, we'll go to Perth, but just give us a minute, you know? Give us a minute to rev up for the journey. So I guess that's a good thing. Glass half full. That not even COVID could be fucked to go there. Another pro, a couple of people said, best beaches in the country. Which is a crazy thing to say. And I can only assume that the people in West Australia who say that West Australia has the best beaches in the country have not left Western Australia. And do you know what, guys? That's absolutely fine. Enjoy the beaches you have. I'm not looking to shit on anyone in this segment. They are fantastic beaches, okay? They're beautiful, beautiful turquoise water. No waves, not really much of a vibe. But I tell you what, guys, enjoy the beaches you have. Not here to shit on you. Are they the best beaches in Australia? No, okay? Are they top five beaches in Australia? Look, they're not, okay? And that's not me being a dick. I just honestly think that anyone who said that has not been to Sydney and or the Northern Rivers, Gold Coast, that sort of area, Burleigh Heads. Okay? And that's not an aggressive thing to say. I think West Australian beaches are beautiful. My mum grew up in Karratha. I've been up to Coral Bay. I've been to Exmouth. I've been to Margaret River. They are beautiful beaches. Are they the best beaches in Australia? They're not. But are they still fantastic in and of themselves? Of course they are. So you can totally have that. Nothing opens till 11 on a Sunday, apparently. That's a con. Honestly, not sure what's going on there. Double time and a half. Maybe the bosses can't be fucked. I'm not sure, but I'd switch that on. But I also kind of rate that the whole city's just like, yeah, just can't be fucked. You know, get into your Makona on Sunday mornings. We'll see you at 11. That seems fine to me. Pro, female backpackers. Con, male backpackers. I totally get that, dude. Is there anything more annoying than people traveling your country who you aren't trying to sleep with? Do you ever have like a pommy guy say hi to you at a pub and it's like, what are you doing? I'm not attracted to you physically. Stop talking to me, okay? So I totally understand that as well. Honestly, any backpacker that makes it over to West Australia, I'd be kissing them regardless of their gender if I lived in Perth. I'd be thanking them for making the trip. Dude, $9.90 return on a backpacker's budget? Any backpacker that arrives in Perth should get an open mouth kiss on arrival, regardless of gender. That should be the tourism policy, honestly. I could see way more gratitude at the Perth airport. Perth airport is way too cool for school. They're acting like it's just any other airport. You know, you go to the most isolated pub in England or whatever, you walk in the door, the guy behind the desk is pumped to see you. Thank you so much. What a time to be alive. We appreciate you making the journey. Perth, they're carrying on like it's down the road. So I think there could be a little more carry on at the Perth airport for these beautiful backpackers who head over there. Pro, the UFC is going back there in August. That's pretty cool. Perth, I mean, they're making the effort, Perth, with these events. They've got the UFC. Coldplay was just there early in the year. So I'm not sure if they're trying to corner the insecure bloke market. But if so, it explains why I sell so well there. So fair enough to Perth. And this thing where like Australian states now bid on these events, it is kind of annoying. Like if it's Melbourne or Brisbane, I'm a bit more tolerant. But yeah, Perth getting the UFC, Coldplay. I mean, damn it. I had some friends fly all the way to Perth for Coldplay. They said it was unbelievable. But yeah, I love the UFC as much as the next man, but I will not be flying over. Because the tickets are like $800. The flights are like $800. They jacked the hotels up. I mean, you've absolutely cornered us massively there, Perth. And it is a pro that Perth are bidding for these events. But unfortunately, I don't think I can afford to go. So that's a bit of a snapshot of Perth. And obviously a massive con that I don't want to harp on too much about. But the homeless in Northbridge are extremely methy, okay? Keep your head down in Northbridge. The homeless, they're busy bees, okay? Do not get in their way. They're on their way to their next meeting. So enjoy that. Okay, up next, this thing's dragged a little bit. I just like to do the project and then talk about UFC 300 a little bit. The project is the segment where we celebrate Australian talent killing it here and abroad. This week, a girl, or a woman, I should say, a fighter who we have followed on this podcast for quite some time, Australian boxer Skye Nicholson, Brisbane's finest, has done it. She's the WBC featherweight champion of the world. She beat, I've never heard of her challenger before, but either way, WBC featherweight gold, undisputed WBC champion. It's a huge deal. She's 10-0 as a pro, 10 in a row. I followed Skye's career since she went pro, and we love to see it. So shout out, Skye. Not a lot of media coverage here back in Australia, but the problem with boxing is there's like 75 belts per weight division. So she now has one of the belts. Amanda Serrano has the other three belts in her weight division. If they make Amanda Serrano versus Skye Nicholson in Australia, that would be fucking huge, okay? That would be a massive fight. I think Amanda Serrano is going to fight Katie Taylor at the Sphere in Las Vegas in a rematch. Whatever, that's a much bigger fight. Sorry, Skye. But if Amanda Serrano does not fight Skye Nicholson, it opens the door for a homecoming fight for Skye. Get her back in Australia. Let's line up some medical receptionists for her to dance around for 12 rounds. Let's have another absolute washout, unanimous decision for Brisbane's own Skye Nicholson. That would be sick. If Skye defended the strap for the first time in Sydney, I would totally go. So congratulations, Skye Nicholson. That is so sick. Now, up next, I'd just like to finish today's podcast with some UFC 300 banter. And then that is that. Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. I know I'm going to lose a lot of the listeners here with the UFC stuff. This day's podcast is a little bit weird. Obviously, I came back from Melbourne absolutely fucked, you know, down on serotonin, post-holiday blues. I've eaten extremely poorly. I've been drinking a lot of beers, and there's been some extracurriculars in there as well. So not at my absolute best this week. Not a lot happening in the news that I was really vibing with, and I think the podcast reflected it. So hope this was enjoyable to a certain extent, and see you next week. Come out and see me on tour the next few weeks. Perth this Saturday. Going to be so sick. See you there. Show's absolutely cranking. And then I got Brisbane next week, already sold out. But I got Adelaide on the Saturday. Tickets going there. Come on out, Adelaide. Massive circuit after in Adelaide. And looking forward to that, as I always do, with my boys in Adelaide. Then I got Canberra, Sydney, Newcastle, Wollongong. And then that's it for the year. Looking at adding another Brisbane show in June. But I'll let you know about that when I know. So up next, some UFC 300 chat. Okay, so, yeah, unfortunately flying back from Melbourne on Monday just kind of fucked me as far as doing a standalone UFC 300 Young Investors meeting, but I just like to run through basically the main card, give a couple of tips, etc., but also I simply must mention the featured prelim of Jiří Prochazka versus Alexander Rakic, because this is absolute pants-down stuff. Jiří Prochazka is the underdog in this matchup for reasons that are completely beyond me. Pants down moment here, sports bet. We have got you by the balls. Alexander Rakic is paying $1.86 against Jiří Prochazka. His last win was against Thiago Santos in 2021. You're thinking, oh, Thiago Santos, I haven't heard from him in a while, Bill. Where is he fighting currently? Who's his next UFC match against? He is actually a PFL fighter now, and he's currently serving a drug ban. That's how fucking long ago this was. So Rakic, extremely injury prone. He's coming off an ACL injury, like his third one. His last win was in 2021, as I said. Jiří, on the other hand, lives in complete silence in the forest like a fucking psycho and just had a world title fight against Alex Pereira where he was winning large portions of the fight. It didn't go that long, but there was times where Jiří had him hurt and it was a scrap and a half. And before that, Jiří beat Glover Teixeira and was on an absolute run for the belt. I cannot believe Jiří is not paying $1.40 against Alexander Rakic. And also, these guys have beef in the streets. We've got a couple of Eastern European guys throwing down. Alexander Rakic said he's not actually a samurai, Jiří Prochazka, and that he's seen him doing cocaine in clubs, hitting on chicks. and that he doesn't live this puritanical lifestyle he claims to. Well, do you know what, Alexander Rakic? Sometimes when you're in the club, you got to tell girls you're a fucking samurai to get over the line, okay? I think we've all told a lie or two. I've never gone as far to say that I'm a fucking samurai. But if that's what it takes for Yuri to get laid in Poland, then that's his business, brother, okay? That's his business. Or the Czech Republic, I should say. But Yuri at $1.98, crazy odds. Jump on the Last Samurai at all costs. Up next, Bo Nickel. Captain America is versing Cody Brundage. Bo Nickel is paying $1.04. This is an absolute disgrace. This should not be on the main card. It should barely be on the prelims. I hate Bo Nickel. You know when someone's just too American? They're just so genuine. He's got a short back and sides. He constantly talks about college wrestling as if anyone gives a fuck about it. And obviously I'm not in America, but it's like, do even Americans care about college wrestling? Is this something Americans are talking about on the street? College wrestling? He gives the most boring interviews, and I know that he represents like what a good American Christian boy looks like, but sorry, I didn't grow up in some no-name town in Texas watching PG cartoons till I was 17, try not to jack off because my priest who touches me told me not to. So I hate Bo Nickel. Do not ever, ever bet on mixed martial arts when it goes below $1.20 because it just is too slippery. It's a cage fight with 4-ounce gloves. How could any man on the planet be paying $1.04? This is a no-name Mickey Mouse showcase fight. Stay away from it at all costs. Bo Nickel's last fight was against a landscaper, okay? That's like they're just teeing this guy up cans. That's fine. Just keep it off UFC 300, I think. His last fight was against a landscaper who took the fight on a week's notice. He rocked up to the airport by himself, this poor guy. Couldn't even afford to bring his coaches with him. Imagine if I told you, oh, it was a big week for the lads. Yeah, we flew to Las Vegas. Adzi actually fought Bo Nickel in a UFC pay-per-view. That's the equivalent here. So yeah, my mate Adam fucking put down the tools for a week to fight Bo Nickel opening the pay-per-view. Like, whatever, dude. Keep feeding Bo Nickel cans, but just do it on a less relevant card. Next, this is the one. I remember one day my dad told me, he said, Bill, one day an opportunity will come across you in life and you'll just know in your gut that you have to go for it. It might be a girl, it might be a job, it might be a city, but you'll just know in your gut that you have to take it with both hands. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the opportunity I've been talking about. This is the opportunity my dad was talking about, I should say. This is what it's all about. Charles Dubronx Oliveira is paying $2.79 against Armin, who gives a fuck, Sarukian, who is paying $1.45. These odds aren't just good. These odds are incorrect. Like one of the autistic quacks at Sportsbet has hit the wrong button. These are incorrect odds. I don't understand how these odds could reflect what's going to happen in this fight less. And I get it. Armin Sarukian is just coming off knocking out Benil Dariush in the first round. That narrative is also incorrect. Armin Sarukian is coming off knocking out what was left of Benil Dariush in the first round. Because 3 months earlier, Charles Oliveira did the exact same thing to him with a head kick. Okay? I don't know how Charles Oliveira, the former champ, can knock out Benil Dariush with a head kick in the first round. And coming off that win is a $2.80 underdog against Armin Sarukian. Honestly, make it make sense. I think the champion has a name. I think the king of the favelas will rise once again. I'm not sure what country Armin's from. I personally don't give a fuck. It's probably a soft one. I've never seen a sport that so quickly forgets how good its champions are. I think Charles could win literally by any way. I think he could knock him out. I think he could sub him. Nobody's made it past the third round with Charles. Not that this is a 5-round fight anyway. I will say, I don't want Charles fucking around off his back too much. I think Armin could win via control time if Charles is too comfortable just laying on his back, throwing up submissions and elbows. I need to see a bit of urgency from Charles getting back to his feet here. And then give me that Brazilian Muay Thai just walking forward, shooter box style. Oh my God. If there was one area I think Armin maybe better than Charles. He may have better hair than him. Armin Sarukian has a sickening hairline. But then Charles dyes his hair blonde. I wake up fucking in my backyard 6 hours later, shaking, okay? So blonde Charles is going to get this done. This is free money. This is absolute South Coast property stuff right here. Get on it at all costs. Now, couple more things. I'd like to just brush past Wei Li versus Yao Xianan. Look, dude, it's no secret. I love Wei Li Zhang. She's my queen. She's my Eastern queen. And I watched her hit pads on the embedded, and it is absolutely sickening. Okay? Absolutely sickening. She's throwing body kicks on the Muay Thai pads. I fell off my couch. She's paying $1.21. Those odds are correct. I think she's going to absolutely run over her fellow countrywoman here. And that's all I have to say about that. This fight's not doing a lot for me. Wei Li versus Tatiana Suarez, I would have made as the co-main, but whatever. All right, up next, Max Holloway and Justin Gaethje. This fight's just so sick. It was made for absolutely no reason, but who gives a fuck? I know the BMF belt is fake, but if it means we get to see this matchup, then fine. Let's have it. I think Justin Gaethje will win this fight just via being a real lightweight. I just don't know how Max is able to hurt Justin to the point where it significantly alters the pace of the fight. Do you know what I mean? Whereas I think Justin with the leg kicks and the heavy hands, I think the power difference is like really significant in this fight. Fight to go the distance, $1.94 is kind of talking to me on this one, or failing that, Justin Gaethje KO points. I think we could see a situation where Max Holloway, is everyone's like, that guy is such a warrior, but he could get like Tony Ferguson out here, as far as it could be a bit of a career-changing beating if this goes the distance. And I worry for Max in this one. I think he's going to go great. Like, I'm sure he will not look out of place in there, of course, and it's going to be a fantastic fight, but I think he could absorb some heavy, heavy shots. And I know he's got a chin and a half, but I mean, God bless him. It's going to be a very tough night at the office for Max Holloway, I believe. Now, finally, Alex Pereira, Jamahal Hill. Yeah, look, personal bias here. I absolutely love Alex Pereira and I fucking hate Jamahal Hill. So that's how I feel about that. Jamahal Hill, paper champ, really. Took a vacant belt off a 43-year-old washed Glover Teixeira. He's so crap online. He's always complaining and bitching at the fans. He's like replying to people's comments or crying and stuff. He's also coming off a ruptured Achilles 9 months ago. They definitely threw a fuckload of cash at him to make this main event happen because they had nothing else. I honestly think Alex Pereira leg kicks him and I reckon just re-ruptures that Achilles. I question Jamahal Hill's fitness. It's tough because he always looks kind of pudgy. He's not one of these guys who's like ripped. He's kind of built like Latrell Mitchell if he was a light heavyweight. But I question how 100% Jamahal Hill is. And don't be surprised if Alex beats the fuck out of him and Jamahal comes out with all these excuses because he's kind of a piece of shit, Jamahal Hill, and there's no way around that. He also has absolutely horrendous tattoos, whereas Alex's are hard as fuck. So at the same time, Jamahal Hill has heavy hands. I wouldn't like to see Alex trading too much. I honestly just think Alex should stand at distance and just leg kick the fuck out of him until that Achilles re-ruptures. That's what I'm looking for from Alex Pereira. $1.75. Those odds are correct. $2.10 for Jamahal Hill. Those are correct odds. Bet on Alex Pereira. KO points. I question Jamahal Hill's ability to go 5 rounds coming back off this injury. Alex Pereira KO, I don't even mind too much, to be honest. I think he fucks him up. So that's what I think about that. Sorry I didn't do a whole separate episode, but a few thoughts there. Come and see me in Perth this weekend, Adelaide next weekend. It's all happening. Thanks for listening. Miss ya. Wanna kiss ya. I gotta stop saying that at the end, eh? That's fucking weird, dude. Way too long, way too long. Yeah, and I can see the ground now. I'm way too gone, way too gone.